Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock hour. Game is right around the corner. Front yard, Ellis Island. Willie's down here giving away prizes. Ellis Island just giving away stuff all the time. Our buddy Matt came down playing blackjack, won a growler. I just saw the servers walking through the customers here. And this can be you on the unlimited food menu. All you can eat food, or you can do all you can eat beer, or you can do both. A Vikings crowd showed up, but now they're being outpaced by the Bears fans, who probably have 3 8-tops filled. It's an intense rivalry. I'm sure the Skull chant will come up at some point. That's if J.J. McCarthy's any good, which I'm not sure that he's going to be good right away. Okay, ready for the unlimited menu? All you can eat?
Oh, Mateo and I are ready.
Because they've added more food items on this.
We're ready.
First of all, if you want to get breakfast, you can get breakfast here as part of the all-you-can-eat. I had the chicken and waffles a couple weeks ago. Really good chicken. Waffles were awesome. First down snacks include the giant pretzel is as good as any in the market. Trust me. And listen, I'm just going to say it, and I'll say it a bunch during the season. When you hear radio people, and of course all of our radio people are completely truthful, but when you hear people mention places they hang out at, do they really? Willie, do I really hang out here?
Yes.
Yes. Like, yes. All the time.
Yes.
So when I vouch for something, and I am a chubbo, so I know food, snacks include giant pretzel, fried pickles, the pork belly bites. I mean, every person I have come down here, especially from out of town, I'm like, we're getting the pork belly bites. Main event items include smoked brisket sandwich. You know they do barbecue in-house here. Cajun chicken sandwich, that's new. Pulled pork sandwich, drive-in burger, meatball grinder, Tony's rigatoni, spicy pepperoni pizza, white pizza. You get rings, onion rings, the tots, the fries, and for dessert, you got to try the bread pudding. That's all of those items are on the all-you-can-eat menu. And then, of course, they brew their own beer here. So they generally have 6 to 4 craft brews they have on tap. I love the Hefty, and that's part of the all-you-can-drink beer special. There's also an all-you-can-drink just period with spirits. So they hook you up at Ellis Island.
Here's the most important thing. You come down here during the watch party, and you put your name in the hat. I'm giving away every week 2 complimentary all-you-can-drink-and-eat unlimited during primetime football. You just can't use it tonight, so we give it away on Monday. But Thursday night football, Sunday night football, Monday night football. If you win during the game, it's unlimited. Can't beat that. Can't beat that. There's no, it's not, I just checked with the guy. I was like, what was it last year? I can't remember. What was it, like $100? He goes, no, it's unlimited. So there's no cap. There's no salary cap. There's no food cap. No drink cap. All you can drink, all you can eat, Sunday, Monday, Thursday night. So come down. I'm giving a couple of those away. 6 to 8 is the watch party. I'm going to be rocking the mic. I'm going to go from Willie Ramirez to Willie Will.
Willie Will.
DJ Willie Will.
DJ Willie Will. I think Nick Bogdanovich's eyes lit up when you were like, hey, Willie Will here. He's like, I remember the days. I need the Bears tonight. We know Griffin needs the Bears tonight. But I need it on my 5-game card. I'm in a lot of contests. The card included this week, Willie. I think everyone's going to laugh, but my favorite pick of the week was the Colts. I really believe the Colts are going to be pretty solid this year, and I think the Dolphins, just that disharmony. Anyway, Colts pick, Raiders plus 2.5, Bucks minus 2.5. That was an escape job with the field goals. Seahawks was a right side loss. No, they lost. But I had Seahawks plus 2.5 against the Niners. And tonight I've got Bears on the midweek number from last week, plus 1.5. Boomers has that game right now. That's the sportsbook down here at Ellis as a pick. And the total is 43.5. What's your pick on the game?
I'm going to stick with my original pick, which was the Chicago Bears to win this game. I'm just leery because, as I said earlier when we were talking to Nick Bogdanovich, Boomer Sportsbook, I've yet to hear one person pick the Vikings. They opened up the favorite. There's a big reason why those big buildings behind us, Steve,
yep,
are on the Las Vegas Strip. The odds makers, the casinos, they don't lose. So the original favorite was the Vikings. I've yet to hear one person pick the Vikings, which is, so it makes me leery, but I'm not going to waver from my pick. I think we saw yesterday how much Ben Johnson has missed. I think he's going to bring a different element. I think Caleb Williams has a chip on his shoulder. And as you mentioned earlier, we do not know if J.J. McCarthy, the Vikings went 14-3 last year. They won 14 games with Sam Darnold. So they've gone away from him. They're going to J.J. McCarthy. It's unproven. This game is at Soldier on the lakefront. Very big game. Very big rivalry. I'm picking the Bears.
Griffin, how do you feel about your Bears? What's your game breakdown?
We got a lot of factors going into this game, just strictly for the Chicago Bears. You got an unproven commodity in the quarterback for the Vikings in J.J. McCarthy. You don't know how he's going to come out. The one benefit they have is, though, some would argue Caleb Williams is also a question mark. At least Caleb Williams was able to go through his rookie season. He knows what it's like to go through a year in the NFL. I think this game will come down to which team performs better. The Vikings have a great defense. The Bears, maybe not to that exact caliber as the Vikings defense, but the defense will be good. They are at home. I see my Bears getting this one done. I see it being about a 21-14 score. Go Bears.
Well, I picked the Bears. I'm picking them again. So I don't think there's going to be a low-scoring game, although based on what happened over the weekend, and maybe it'll be a slop fest. It'll be 16-13, but I think both teams will be able to score. But I'm going to take the Bears. I'm high on the Bears. I think the Bears are going to have a good season.
We got a raucous crowd down here, too. I don't think it's going to be a physical game, but I also don't know if it's going to be high scoring. I think we're going to see some offensive moves, but I think we are going to see some defensive stands in this one. I am leaning toward the under, 43.5. How about if I just give you a final? Bears 23, Vikings 20. Comes down to the end.
All right. And you just get the under.
Bears in the under, yep. There you go.
I like that.
Okay.
Food for thought. All right. As I mentioned, that was my card. I'm 3-1 so far. I would love to go 60% for the season. That would be a miracle. I would love to be 53%. That would be a miracle. But I need the Bears tonight. We're going to talk to Caleb Herring in about 17 minutes. Former quarterback with UNLV, one of the voices of the Rebels on radio, host of the Dan Mullen radio show. Willie, what impressed you the most with UNLV's win?
Anthony Calandra.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I came away with. It's what I wrote about. It was, I was hamstrung on it. I know the defense at the beginning was a story. My colleague Steve Karp wrote about it for the Sporting Tribune. But, I mean, I just, it's what's hard not to like about Calandria. Completed 15-21 passes, 203 yards, 3 touchdowns, 71% of his passes, turns into passing efficiency of 199.8, a couple of 21 touchdown passes, but what I liked most was his comfortability and sort of just his style of going to his targets and how he dropped passes in the bucket. I mean, I thought that he really looked good. I thought he passed with a lot of poise, a lot of grace. He ran for 13 of his 59 yards on the Rebels' final drive, picked up the first down to seal the win, but he was comfortable in turning to that run as well. Pass first, run second guy, but his comfortability with this offense and his knack for leadership in the huddle and his command of his troops. And again, I'll repeat what he had said in the press conference in terms of these relationships were built in January. They were built early on this year in bringing everybody together, and the relationships that they built off the field, I think you're seeing that, and I think that's what's important. And I think that's why this offense has been able to do what it's been able to do and why it's going to be able to continue to grow and be able to go on the road in a couple of weeks and contend at a very good Miami O team that was in the MAC championship last year. So Anthony Calandria's leadership and his poise is what impressed me most overall with this team.
Well, good news for Calandria. He has definitely cemented the job as a starter with his play in the first three games. Bad news for the Rebels. His backup quarterback, Alex Orji, is out for the season. That was announced earlier today. He took a pop on the leg. He got high load in his couple of plays that he was out there. I think he was going to be part of the game plan running the ball, especially up 23-3. So Calandria is going to be the guy, and Cam Friel, the super senior, is going to be the backup. I'll tell you what impressed me, and I know the numbers don't play it out, but this was a game where it was played in phases. Obviously, the fourth quarter was a mad rush for UCLA to try to come back. The third, they took control on the ground. You know, the first quarter and a half, they had 64 yards of offense. And I think the back end of the defense is coming together. I had mentioned early on, first 2 weeks, Mumu Bin Wahad hadn't played. And he's a pretty high-profile transfer in that defensive backfield. So he got in a lot more. He was in for 25 plays. He actually rated the highest on PFF's defensive rankings for the game. So I think the DBs are coming together. And the unit that I'm really fired up about is the defensive line. I told you before the season, bigger and deeper than any line they've ever had. And while they have all these seniors, right, they have a bunch of transfers in. They have an Arroyo guy still there, and Wesley Mouvesi, he got in for like 20 snaps. They have Jalen Lee in from LSU in Florida. They had a couple of young guys get sacks. Mullen has layered this team really impressively, where it was a win for now with a lot of seniors, but he's got backups in the two unit who are young dudes, Willie, like Lucas Conti, who's been here for 3 years. It's a flyover at the end of the anthem. Vikings and Bears fans going crazy down here at Ellis
Island.
It's
great. It's just fantastic. They are fired up. There's people standing up for the national anthem. Steve, this is probably one of the best crowds that we've had since we've been down here. This is fantastic for week one.
So two of the young guys, Lucas Conti, sophomore, and Landon Thomas had a sack. And he's another one. He's legit, 6'3 and a half. You know, big legs, big rear end. Can probably carry 300 pounds like it's going to be nothing. He was at Arizona State before he came here. And those guys are getting playing time. So they're building depth. I think that's going to pay off in the future. So while things are feeling pretty good for UNLV at 3-0, around the NFL, it is overreaction, week one. I don't want to overreact to Miami, but game one kind of went like I thought it would. I didn't think they'd get 8 points and like garbage at the end. Tua had a 2.7 QBR. It's a 0 to 100 scale. He was terrible. He turned it over 3 times. Tyreek Hill was only out there for 29 to 47 plays. A little dinged up. He's already complaining. I mean, you talk about a team that better right the ship in week two and get a win against a not-so-great Patriots team. Dolphins better win this week. Because that was a terrible look yesterday.
Yeah, and I listened to McDaniel afterwards, and the one quote that all I heard that stood out was, I have to do my job. Dude, you shouldn't have to say that at this point in your career, in this tenure, at this position. We already know that. I have to do better at my job. Yeah, no crap. You know, this is not...
Can I tell you the biggest thing that drives me nuts about him? Because we know the deal. And again, I'm the only one in the country who predicted this.
Okay.
I don't know if someone else did. I don't care.
No, you're not. You're the only one.
I told everyone the ultimate test for this hire was going to be that battle that we've got now. The nerds in football versus the big galoots.
Yeah.
It's the Dan Campbells who people laugh at it. Like, we're going to bite your kneecaps off.
Yes.
But that's what people like. They like the giant guy, the 6'7", 260, you know, it's going to rip your head off. This new nerd style. And there are kind of nerdy guys. Or like Kyle Shanahan's a football guy. You know, he's a walk-on at Texas because of dad. Played wide receiver. By the way, Mike McDaniel played wide receiver as well at Yale. But there are nerds around. But those who win, we don't really call them on it. when you act like Mike McDaniel does. And at the press conference this morning, he's sitting there and he's not making eye contact. He's looking down. I'm like, it is a portrayal of weakness. Look at the crowd. Is that the way he addresses his team? Like, it's got to get tougher. If he's not tough enough, then there's got to be someone on the staff who's the fire and brimstone guy. Because the Dolphins have way too much talent to get mauled by the Colts 33-8.
The problem with that is, if you're going to call him a nerd, is you better be figuring, in this day and age of analytics and stats and figuring it out, 12 first downs, 78 yards rushing, 211 net yards, 46 offensive plays to 70 for the Colts. You better figure it out and how to sustain offensive drives when that's supposed to be your bread and butter.
And by the way, you can be the analytics guy, the smart guy, and command respect, right?
I named
some of the guys who have. Because one of the guys who's really built his brand now on bashing the guys who don't look like football guys, like he was all over Staley, is Rex Ryan. But I will tell you with Rex, Rex can't get a job in the NFL. You know why? Because Rex ain't a nerd, but he ain't respected.
Right.
Because he doesn't work. Because he's jerking around all the time. He's a TV guy now. So I do find it funny when I watch on these mornings when Rex Ryan is lighting up some of these coaches. Like, Rex, you're not respected, bro. You're begging for a job. And now last year we saw it. He's getting courtesy interviews. And you know behind the scenes are like, we're not hiring him. He's not willing to work anymore. He's not going to put in the work. He's not respected by the players. He's kind of a paper tiger. He's a false tough guy. Now, was he a tough guy in the past? I think he was. But he's kind of lost it over the years. There's different styles can work, but right now it ain't working for the Dolphins. All right. You want a hot take? I don't think the Ravens in a big game, especially in the playoffs, will beat the Bills anytime soon.
I'm upset.
I don't think Lamar Jackson has the ability to bring his team from behind the way Josh Allen does, where 15 points in the final 4 minutes gets erased.
You don't get to put this on Lamar, and not with the games that him and Derrick Henry. This is on that defense. I don't know how much.
Willie, it's third and nine. You can't throw underneath. You can't throw underneath, Lamar. You got to push the ball down the field.
Jesus, I think you broke my eardrum.
Come on now. It's plays like that. You can't throw the ball underneath on a third and nine.
Okay, but you have to have a defense to stop. There's only so much that, I mean, I get it. It's a shootout. But they also got to stop the other. At some point, a defense has to stop the other side. That game, they're up by 15. Defense has to make stops as well. So, yes, you're right. I mean, there's decision-making, and there's playmaking, and Derrick Henry can't fumble the ball. But at the same token, come on, make a stop.
Pete Carroll wins yesterday, oldest coach in the history of the NFL to win a game. He's like a month shy of 74 years old. That looked like a different Raiders team. One, quarterback play was much better. Geno Smith throws for over 350 yards. He wasn't locked in on certain receivers. He lost his best receiver before the end of the game in Brock Bowers. He found a way to get the ball. 8 catches for 97 yards to Jacoby Myers. By the way, Vikings start out with the ball. There was a sack on third down, so Bears are going to get it back here. Good for you, Griffin. But I thought that looked like a revitalized Raiders team. I'm still worried about the back end on defense. I love the defensive line. That was one of my favorite things about the game because
Drake May was under pressure.
While some jabronis out there were like, oh, Jacorian Bennett, he's the starter, and he might be. They lost a trade. You're just giving a guy away. Tommy Booker is a nice player. And the other thing is, you know who can beat Howie and the Eagles when it comes to trades? The guys they brought in from the Eagles, right? They have brain trust from the Eagles as well. So I thought Booker looked good. Tyree Wilson didn't grade well on Pro Football Focus, but he had a couple of good plays. His sack on the edge was a power sack.
Right.
Just ran right through the guy, right into the quarterback, right into May. Max Crosby had a good game. I like that they have a rotation. They have a lot of developmental guys. So, and the other one, Devin White, 11 tackles.
How about that? I've been sitting on a feature with him, and I have to get this out.
Screw you, Jason Licht, who badmouthed him a couple weeks ago and said he's a selfish guy.
By the way, you mentioned just now, and we talked about it last week. We said, hey, let's not forget. I can't remember what day it was we were talking, and Griff jumped in, and we were like, wait, let's not forget their best player, Brock Bowers. How good did Jakobi Meyers actually look? Right? We're all questioning his – what's he going to do? The contract, the this, the that. I thought the chemistry looked pretty damn good there in the first half. I mean, every time he looked up, they were Geno Smith and him were hooking up. Again, I repeat, 9 completions of 20-plus yards. Very, very inspiring this passing game. So,
up next, Caleb Herring, color voice of the Rebels, former quarterback of the Rebels, co-host of the Dan Mullen Radio Show, and will break down what he saw with multiple quarterbacks: Anthony Calandria, Nico with UCLA, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Fields. Quarterback guru Caleb up next.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Griff, give me a thumbs up when Mr. Herring's ready to go. Bears on the doorstep here. 8 minutes left in the first quarter. Vikes, Bears, Monday Night Football. Really good collection of Vikings fans at the front yard. If you haven't been here, it's spectacular. True locals place. You go 2 blocks, the beers are $13, $15, $17. Not here. You got an all-you-can-eat special, all-you-can-drink beer, all-you-can-drink spirits, specials. You don't have to do the all-you-can-eat or drink. Obviously, they've got a great menu here at the front yard. Willie Ramirez is going to be off mic for a little bit as he'll be hosting the party here, making some announcements. But we bring in Caleb. What's up, buddy?
Monday Night Football is what's up. I'm trying to, like, recoup after a full weekend of college football, NFL football, and now finishing the weekend off with Monday Night Football. I'm fantastic.
So the Rebels get a big win against UCLA, and while every question referenced the fact that they just beaten a Big Ten team, we all kind of know this Big Ten thing is sort of a joke. UCLA just got into the conference. I thought it was interesting that Dan Mullen kept kind of ignoring that in the post-game press conference and kept referencing it as a West Coast rivalry game, which I actually think he's right on that front. The impact of a win against UCLA is to try to compete in California for players. Now you've got some bulletin board material here. Like, hey, we beat them. You're looking at them, we beat them. Compete for players in Arizona and also keep more Vegas guys from going to Southern California to go to school.
Yeah, I think what happened in, like, the for the narrative of a Big Ten school, I think what happened with the conference realignment was there became a sort of tiered Big Ten, right? Where there's, like, when you say the Big Ten, you can either mean Ohio State and Michigan, or you can mean Purdue and, in this case, UCLA. I think UCLA doesn't carry the same weight as a Big Ten, as a new Big Ten school, as, like I said, the aforementioned kind of historically Big Ten schools, if you will. So, the Big Ten narrative got kind of drummed up a little bit. I get the sentiment, but that's not the most important aspect. And I think the regional nature of a West Coast win, as Coach Mullen put it, does have significant impact in the recruiting trail. It has a significant impact in transfer portals. I think sometimes just seeing the name UCLA goes down to UNLV, the more you win against any of these teams, guys that transfer from UCLA next year, because there will be we'll look at UNLV as a potential landing spot. And guys that are transferring from elsewhere in the nation will maybe say, I want to go to the West Coast, but not to UCLA. I'd rather go to UNLV. Those are little subtle things that may end up being a big difference in the future when it comes to program building. But I also think it's important for viewership and for audience interest, if you will. The common region, I think, is a thing that's getting lost with all the travel of these kind of conference realignment things. Like, we were worried about a lot of rivalries disappearing because of conference realignment, but one of the ways you can bring that back is having regional non-conference games and finding that team in your region that is a good matchup for you. I think will be a big deal going forward. So LA Vegas, I think, was a big theme, and I think that will be the two major cities that are right next to each other. Why not make that a kind of rivalry across all sports?
Anthony Calandria wins another Mountain West Conference Offensive Player of the Week. How'd he do it?
He did it with efficiency. I think that's been his trademark, his claim to fame has been his efficiency, and able to make good decisions with the ball, not turning it over, completing a high percentage of his passes. I think he ended up with 77% on the game. So that's probably his biggest attribute is his efficiency. He also makes some plays with his legs that I think dazzle crowds and get a lot of oohs and ahs from people watching. So the spectator enjoys themselves when they're watching Anthony Calandra. But most importantly, he got his team to win. I think in this game particularly, he did things that were just winning plays, moments in the game that stood out as him putting his fingerprint all over the game and making a big difference for his team.
Willie, the hype man in the background. He's going crazy. I don't know if you can hear it. Okay, let's talk about the neck up, right? Because that was a factor in this game. UNLV, in many ways, allowed UCLA to get back in the game with mistakes on penalties, with personal fouls, with some taunts. And, you know, I'm going to call one guy out. I really love that he has the breakthrough the first 2 weeks of the game, first 2 weeks of the season, but Jaden Bradley didn't have a big game. Other guys had to step up and score touchdowns. Jaden has got to keep it together from the mental side of things. He's too good to, one, take himself out of the game on the field, but he also, after a touchdown, he got a penalty, then, you know, set up UCLA with good field position. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it was an unnecessary penalty, and we've mentioned it on the broadcast, Matt and I, there was a lot of unnecessary sort of celebrating, showboating type thing that was going on. And I don't have a problem with having fun out there, especially when you're doing it with your teammates. You know, so certain dances and things that they did on the field that led to that Jaden Bradley penalty, I didn't mind at all. It was celebrating, having fun with your teammate. But once you start putting the opponent down, I think you cross the line a little bit. And you got to understand that it's not necessary, especially in a situation like you mentioned, up three possessions, giving them life with that penalty that gave them the shortest field position they had in the game to that point. They salvaged 3 points, and it really just kind of deflated the crowd. Even just the way the penalty was assessed, there was a lot of energy that got sucked out of the room because of that. And momentum is a crazy thing, and analytics don't really account the yardage. You won't really see it, but the emotional letdown or the emotional spark that it provided at that moment for the Bruins really led and was the first domino to fall in what was a very, very valiant comeback effort by the Bruins in the second half. And you could point to that Bradley penalty as being a turning point of the game, and he's definitely got to tighten it up. But there's others. There's others that maybe didn't get flagged for where you just see that kind of mindset creeping in. And it takes discipline to understand how to celebrate with your team, but also not be a detriment by going a little too far.
Willie Cofield, Caleb Herring's up with us. Bears are up 7-0. Caleb Williams goes into the end zone. Caleb Herring is on the show. By the way, if anyone thinks that I was harsh talking about Jaden Bradley or you just were, you had about a 2-minute diatribe where I'm sitting on the field listening to you and I was like, whoa, you went off about the mistakes. I mean, it's serious stuff. And Mullen, you remember at the half, they're up 23-3, and because of that mistake and the chance for UCLA to get a field goal, Mullen comes over. They're beating a Power 4 team 23-3, and I said to him right away, I'm like, you got a frown on your face. What's going on here? And he was annoyed. Real quick, on the other side, because I really want to get into quarterback breakdown here because you're so good at this. What did you think of Nico from the first half to the second half? Because his throwing was much better in the second half. But I also think that Tino Sunseri set him up with some real workable stuff in the run game to get his confidence back.
I absolutely think that was a good sign for that program in terms of the coach's relationship with the player. I think the coach recognized potentially that there was some things that UNLV was doing that were rattling him, Nico, early in that game. And I think they intended to try and take deep shots as their game plan and have Nico sit in the pocket and attack the secondary, like a couple of teams have had success doing early in the season, going all the way back to Idaho State. I think that was the initial game plan for the Bruins. I think to the Rebels' credit, they did a good job taking those things away early and getting pressure when Nico had to sit in the pocket. The adjustment was to get the ball out of his hands quick, especially early in the second half. Either they were running on first down more or they were using quick RPO hitters to kind of settle him down and also to tire out UNLV's rush. There was a lot of plays where UNLV just couldn't get home quick enough. I think that settled Nico, and I think you see that again with the relationship between your coach and your quarterback. That developed some trust between Nico and his play callers, and I think that's huge for him going forward in his development. He showed me things that I make you understand why he was a Heisman hopeful a year ago. And then he also showed some things that showed the lack of maturity and why he needs to grow and develop still, and he still needs some tutelage as a sophomore. But I think they took a step in the right direction as a program, and that can do wonders for a quarterback to, even though you come up short, you end up throwing the game-sealing interception, just the fact that you came back from so far down and really had all the momentum on your side, I think his teammates, his coaches probably looked to Nico Iamaliava as a little bit more of a leader than they did before last week.
Speaking with Caleb Herring, voice of the UNLV Rebels, along with, of course, with Matt Neverett. They'll be back in a couple of weeks when UNLV visits Miami O. Let's shift gears to the NFL, Caleb. Steelers-Jets. Rodgers, still elite. Did Fields open your eyes? What did we see in this game?
I think that was probably my win-win game of the weekend. It was a great game, very entertaining. I was rooting for both quarterbacks specifically because Aaron Rodgers is my favorite player of all time. He's the reason I'm a Green Bay Packer fan to this day. And Justin Fields, I think, has gotten an unfair shake in terms of the narrative around him and his ability as a quarterback for the first 4 years of his NFL career. And I think this game one with the Jets was a confidence boost for him, and it put on display the skill set that maybe potentially is game-changing and season-changing for a franchise. We'll see if he gets the keys to the Jets, if he can continue to play well. I think they'll have a solid season this year, but we'll see. I compare Justin Fields to Jalen Hurts in terms of what they're capable of being on the field, and the difference, I think, is Jalen Hurts has had organizational structure around him that is conducive to winning in the NFL. And for Justin Fields' career in Chicago, he did not have that. And the experiment with the Steelers, I think he gave it his best shot, but it just wasn't the year for the Steelers. Now I think the Steelers have found the quarterback for them. It looks like Justin Fields is the quarterback for right now with the Jets, with what they have from a weapons standpoint offensively. Breece Hall is going to be fantastic if he can stay healthy. I think the Jets have a shot. Maybe not to win the division, because that division belongs to the Bills right now, but with Justin Fields, I think they are a playoff contender if they can play like they did in week one.
I admittedly was a Daniel Jones stan while he was in New York. I had been pulling for this kid. I thought that he was the guy, and he obviously did not turn out. But did he find life in Indianapolis?
I think he did. I would hold back on saying he's totally redeemed himself at this point, because I don't know if the Dolphins just stink, and that could very well be the case. But he did show you and prove that he has the tools to get the job done. And a lot of it is between the ears that I think in New York it's just not – you saw what happened with Russell Wilson in week one in New York. There's something in the water over the Giants, and any quarterback over the last really decade who has tried it out over there has had those struggles. But he proved that he's an NFL quarterback, and he's not a laughingstock. I think what a lot of people made him out to be, which makes you kind of have to defend him, because he's not a laughingstock when he plays quarterback. It doesn't help that he tripped on that 80-yard potential touchdown run that became kind of a joke. And he's become kind of a joke as a result of what happened in New York. But I think New York Giants are more organizational issues than quarterback issues. And with new hope, he maybe has a chance to revitalize. We'll have to see him do it a couple more weeks in a row. But if he keeps winning, Daniel Jones might really earn that nickname, Danny Dimes.
Is Green Bay the team to beat in the NFC North?
In the NFC North, yes. I would say, based on the seismic change in Detroit, missing both coordinators, yes, they got healthy on the defensive line, but I think there's so much missing from them and that they have to figure out before they become a real threat. The Bears get their first action today. They're already up early. Caleb Williams has looked improved, but I still think that the Packers, with that roster, Jordan Love is really the only thing I see holding them back. And just his inconsistency or inability to stay healthy is, I think, the issue there. But defensively, the Packers have figured some things out. The personnel, they're flying around to the football. They won against Detroit without really winning the line of scrimmage offensively. Josh Jacobs had a really relatively quiet day, and they were still able to pull it out. So I think, yes, they are the team to beat in the NFC North. They've got some work to do before they catch the Eagles, in my opinion. I think right now, maybe even the Commanders would probably still be favored over them in the NFC as a whole. But in that division, yes, they are the top dogs, the team to beat right now.
Did the Baltimore Ravens choke, or did the Buffalo Bills come back?
It's a common theme that the Ravens choke. And that's kind of been over the last couple seasons where the Ravens have the roster, they have the talent to get it done. Really, since Derrick Henry came in, they should have been the favorite in the AFC to win it all and get to the Super Bowl. And I think that this Sunday night game, this past Sunday night game, was more about the Ravens choking than it was about Josh Allen and the Bills coming back and snatching victory. Especially in the case you have a fourth quarter fumble, it really gives them an opportunity to even be in that position to win it at the end. So I do think this is on the Ravens. I think a lot needs to be said about Harbaugh and his early decision on, after Lamar Jackson did some amazing things to keep them in the situation to win. I think you got to roll the dice and go for it on that fourth and two, fourth and one and a half, maybe. Let Lamar have a chance to have his moment and win that game for you. Your defense hadn't stopped the Bills in the second half. The outlook wasn't good in terms of getting a stop. So I think you'd be a little bit more aggressive in week one and go for the win and keep Lamar on the. But I think it was more about the Ravens choking it away. Don't take anything from Josh Allen. He played phenomenal down the stretch, and they did what they had to do. But I think that game was more about the Ravens and their internal issues more than it was about Buffalo really being the better team that night.
Time for a Broadcaster Bites presented by Boomers Sportsbooks. The food this week, I don't know if you had any thing you wanted to enter into the conversation around Vegas this week, but the media meal at Allegiant for the UNLV game, very, very solid showing, although they did try to trick you again with the mushroom steak.
Yeah, mushroom steak. Here's my thing. Everybody at this point should know how I feel about vegan options in terms of like the plant-based meat imposter syndrome that goes on in today's society. We've got to get rid of it. It's fading away, thankfully, but it still peaks its ugly head every now and then. And that was the case up in the press box at Allegiant this past weekend. Best meal Allegiant serves for the media up there, by far, the short rib. The braised short rib is absolutely fantastic. Mark Wallington and the staff reserved it for the big games. This was the biggest game of the season in terms of who was rolling in town. So they brought the short rib out. Fantastic. A+. No complaints from the short rib for me. They also had it paired with some mashed potatoes. Not mashed potatoes, but the smashed potato. I don't even know what they really call this, but it was good. It was good. My issue was they tried to wedge the vegan option in between the side dishes and the main course. And to me, that's a no-no because you're trying to trick me into getting it. Then the name of the food was mushroom steak. No, because to the untrained eye, you might just think it's steak. And that could ruin your day, biting into what you think is a steak and finding out it's a mushroom. But the vegan option should almost be separate on a different table. Maybe even put it next to the salad if you're going to have it in your buffet line. Don't try to trick me into getting the vegan option by putting it in front of what you know I really want, which was the short rib. So, but other than that, no complaints about Allegiant's rollout this week. I'm looking forward to a couple of games on the schedule, one of them being Hawaii. Steve can tell you guys why later on, but I had no complaints about the broadcaster fiddles that were up there in the press box last week.
We do have 2 weeks to research. We did a pretty good job in Houston. We have 2 weeks to research a place I don't know much about, Oxford, Ohio. Miami of Ohio is hosting UNLV. I'm going to try this, but I don't think it's going to go over. I like German food. Like in Oxford, Ohio. Well, there's a place called Steinkeller, but I don't know if I can get the group to dedicate one of the two meals that we get on the road to a German joint.
So technically, we went to a place in Reno a few years back that had a German night. I don't think the menu had any really different German type food on there, and I honestly wouldn't know what a German dish would be. It's not one of those international dishes that has like a signature to me. Like, what's their signature dish? I'm down to try it. You know, I would try things and give it a chance, but I just also am aware that I will not grade on a curve. If I don't like it, I'll tell you how I feel about it.
No, we know. Please don't get into that. We've heard when you don't like a place, my God. I would actually like to go to this place simply because I think you need a repeat opportunity to hold a beer stein, which at that place in Reno, it turned out that your hands and your arms were very weak, my friend.
Yeah, they are. And I think, you know, I now at least have justification for why they're weak. And we haven't, I don't think, talked about it on air yet, but I could justify why my puny arms don't hold up as long as some of the other contestants.
I was going to say, right now it's not going to work. You know, you're down.
Right now it won't work.
Yeah, I'm not going to press you on that one.
But I would try. I definitely would try, especially if everybody else is doing it. You have to. It's a part of going out with the fellas. You got to do that kind of stuff. But I do want redemption at some point, and I'll figure out when that is. But we'll have to have the camera crew, the vast recording crew out there to figure out how to get that put on social media as well.
Caleb, good job, buddy. We're up against it. We appreciate your spots on Mondays.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one. Enjoy the game.
Up next, we go into the grab bag. We'll get you updated on what's going on with the Bears and the Vikings right now. It's 7-0 approaching the end of the first quarter with Chicago on top.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Willie, Aces did it again. Is that 14 in a row?
That's all, no big deal. 14 straight. Asia Wilson becomes the first player to score 30 points in a game 13 times in a single season. The records continue to fall, and the Aces continue to look like the scariest team in the WNBA. Before this win streak, Asia Wilson was 100-1 to win the WNBA MVP. She's now minus 350 at some places.
Why is that? Aside from the rush and the winning, what happened to the competition?
Well, Nafisa got injured, and she picked up where she left off when she came back from injury. That injury taking place in the 53-point win when Cheryl Reeves said that we are not comfortable with a 42-point lead with 10 seconds left in the third quarter, even in Vegas. So Nafisa gets injured, and Vegas goes on a run. And when you score 30 points as much as Asia does and you lead your team to a 14-game win streak, that's what's going to happen when you are still, no matter what the makeup of this season has been, you're still the best player on the planet. It's just that things weren't taking place around you, and now they are, and that's what she's done. She's picked up everybody else around her, and you see what, you know, a person like that can do for a team, and that's why she's the MVP. The Lynx, without Nafisa Collier, it wasn't the matter of her missing time. It was the fact that they kept winning without her, and they maintained the number one seed in the WNBA. So they sort of proved. I don't think that the Aces do what they do or did what they did without Asia Wilson, whereas the Lynx proved that they did without Fee.
What's going on with Angel Reese in the Sky?
Angel Reese have made detrimental remarks about the Chicago Sky, saying that they better make changes during the offseason. She's not going through this S word another season. They deemed it detrimental to the team. They suspended her for the first half of the Aces game, and then even though she came out and looked fine in warmups yesterday, somebody handed her a back brace in the back tunnels of T-Mobile. She threw it on, and at halftime they announced that because of back issues she will not be back. I've been told through reliable sources that the relationship with the team is irreparable, and she's done. My guess is, after seeing what she did last year with a wrist injury and she sat out the rest of the season, I don't think we'll see Angel Reese tomorrow night at T-Mobile, and I don't think that she'll be playing for the Chicago Sky again.
Who wants her?
That's a good question, but it's got to be someone with a very tough, domineering coach and a roster where she's not dependent on being the star, and they could rein her in.
If she is traded for nothing, I'm going to be pissed. She better be a Las Vegas Ace next year. Oof. Let's go. You put her with another elite big, Becky Hammond.
How about this?
It's tough.
Aces beat the Lynx in the finals. She goes to Minnesota.
I'm not going to tolerate that. This organization has to go out and get the best, and she's got a ton of upside. Her head's not on right. Unfortunately, you know, that the surrounding team and Tyler Marsh, just, we envision this happening. But she's too good a player to not go to a winning organization. Kind of sucks that she'll force her way out. Anyway, Front Yard, Ellis Island, Monday Night Football. Get on down here. Plenty of game left. Prizes, all you can eat and all you can drink with Willie Ramirez.